All right, we are back. My name is Seth Juarez from Channel 9, and we are here because this is the cool part of everything else was cool, but this is the part where everyone that's watching at home can actually ask questions of you folks about what we've been talking about. This is the Windows Developer Day Creators Update. Now, let's start with introductions, and then I have a couple of my own questions, and then we'll go to some of the questions that are out there, okay? Okay.
Sounds great. I'm Kevin Gallo. I run the Windows Developer Team. Focus on building the tools and APIs that developers use to build apps for Windows.
Fantastic.
I'm Kevin Gamble. I'm the Group Program Manager on the Xbox Platform Team. I deliver the software toolkit that lets developers do AAA games on console, as well as a number of features, gaming-related features, on Windows 10.
Fantastic.
My name is Ashish Babar. I am a Group Program Manager on the DevCenter Team. My team is responsible for friction-free onboarding and servicing of applications and games, and also providing tools and capabilities to acquire, engage, and monetize end users.
It looks like we're out Kevin'd too, because we have Kevin Mead Sandwich in here in the middle. So the first thing I want you to do is I want you to tell us what are some of the exciting things that we talked about for this Creators Update that you are most excited about. Obviously, everything was exciting. And for those that are watching, yes, these will be available on demand later on today, hopefully tomorrow or sometime next week. I can't promise. I have to ask the lady up there that's in charge. All right, go ahead.
Cool. For me, I guess there's a couple things. One, really we've made a huge effort to make it so you can build the highest quality desktop applications with the Universal Windows platform. It's not just for all the extra devices. The desktop has some of the best apps and games. Two, we really brought a bunch of innovations. I tried to show that with Ink and the Dial, Cortana. This is a huge number of cool innovations that really come with all the new modern hardware. And three, probably my favorite, is really we want to engage more deeply with the community. We've done that with the Telerik controls as well as the documentation of the places. We just want to work more and more in partnership with our community.
Fantastic.
For me, it's kind of three things. One, Pix we're bringing to Windows. Pix has been kind of the gold standard on console for really doing performance enhancements to your title. We're finally bringing that to PCs. You saw it demoed earlier. The stuff we're doing around game mode, bringing more performance to your game so Windows 10 continues to be the best operating system for games. And lastly, the Beam integration we're bringing to Windows is great.
So there are a couple of things which I'm really excited about. They are both about essentially increasing the flow of users to the games and applications. One is reducing the friction in the flow for acquiring applications. So now the payments flow is 6x faster for our end users. So less friction means more users can buy your apps and games. And the second one is essentially about you having the capability to target sales and discounts to user segments which you care about. For example, if there are users who are playing my game but they haven't bought any of my in-app purchase items, I can target a discount uniquely to them. So these are a couple of things which I'm really excited about.
Fantastic. So on Twitter, someone said, wait a minute, build isn't for a couple of months. There's a GDC. Have we spent all of our announcements today? I mean, what's going on? I mean, it's tons of cool stuff. What do you say, Kevin?
So realistically, we wanted to focus today on what's coming up in the Windows Creators Update. And so that's what we've done. We've really focused in on what's shipping now. Build will be about what's coming next. So we have a whole host of things that are coming throughout the rest of 2017. And it's a little bit later this year. Typically, we have a little bit earlier. We moved it out into May. So we have what we're coming now. And now we'll talk and build about what's coming in the next iteration. We try to ship twice a year. This is our one release. And we'll talk about what's coming in the next release. We usually give build kind of like that one-year horizon, maybe a little bit plus.
Sure.
So it'll be a bunch of cool stuff about the vision of Windows and what we're going to do.
So we really didn't say everything today.
Not at all.
Awesome. Now, GDC is coming up, and you mentioned Pix. Are we done with all of our cool announcements?
Absolutely not. There's some cool announcements at GDC that I'm not going to talk about
today. Of course not. I wouldn't ask you, because that would be rude.
But we're going to do deep dives in accessibility, really about gaming for everyone and kind of best approaches there. We're going to go deeper into Pix, deeper into game mode, and some other things at GDC as well.
Fantastic. And what about you?
There is a lot more to show at GDC and Build, so just tune at the right moment.
All right, so I'm going to go to the questions here. There's some on the board. Some of them are disappearing, so hopefully they'll put them back up. From Polyam, wait, what? What was that? Indie games on Xbox? Tell us about that.
So indie games on Xbox, absolutely. So today, actually, through the ID at Xbox program, you can bring indie games to Xbox. But we're making that easier by bringing UWP to console. And so anyone who writes UWP, either for Windows or for console, they can take it to basically all Windows devices. One thing I do want to point out is while you still can bring your games to console, you will still need to work with ID at Xbox. That will program will reduce the friction there. It should be really easy for game developers to go do that, but they still need to work through the program.
Awesome. Let's talk about some store questions that I have. Let's just say I've spent the last 40 years working on this WPF application. That's supposed to be funny for devs that are watching. Let's just say I have this really solid WPF application that I'm working on. How do I bring that to the store?
So WPF applications are centennial apps, and so they go through the same process as any other UWP app. You come through Dev Center, and you are done with your submission in a matter of minutes, and your app can be live in the store in a matter of like anywhere between 12 to 24 hours. So
there's several options too, right? Yes. You can use the desktop app converter to get into a centennial application. You can also use Wix, or you can use Install Shield. So there's also a bunch of cool tech to make that easy to go get into the store too.
That's right.
So is Centennial just like a wrapper over this application? Is it your application? How are you protecting? Because I know you can't do certain things in store apps that you can do in WPF apps. Like, for example, I can write to the registry.
Well, it's separated a little bit differently. So whether you come from the store or not, an app that you've converted with desktop application, like a Centennial application, has a few limitations. Most things are compatible, but there's a few things we do. One, we virtualize the registry so that an app can do no harm, and it's very easy to uninstall it. We sort of protect it. We also do some file system redirection. And the third thing is we don't leave chain install. We know a lot of people chain install, and most of us don't want the chain installed. So we've removed that functionality. And we don't let you install drivers or services or things that can be sticky to the system. So the few things we've kind of limited that were things that we did not feel were very good, most people did not want or use, and the rest of it just works seamlessly.
Awesome. So a question from Scott. How often will you add to the roadmap? Is it live, or will you only populate an event? Will the backlog be complete? And that was probably one of the most interesting things for me. It's like, hey, we're going to put our backlog live. Everyone can see what we're working on and why. Why that decision?
Well, I mean, when I talk to developers, I use that example of a black hole. They give us feedback, and then, hey, I come today, and oh, look, I got my feature. But like, can I give feedback along the way? If I go to an insider build, which times I get it in there? Sure, I can go look at what got added. But I want to be able to track my requests, my feedback, that issue across the board. So we figured publishing the backlog, we've talked to the Edge team, and they said it really worked well. And so we felt that was the right model. And yes, we're not going to publish everything. I'm sure there'll be some things we don't. You know, but a lot of it we're going to do is unlock kind of more and more data and show what is in our bug database, what are the features that we're working on, and kind of just making that a much more visible process so you can collaborate and work together on it.
How often will this be updated? Is that events?
It'll be live.
Whenever? It's live.
Actually, the way we do it is we actually have our Visual Studio Online database, because we have everything in Visual Studio Online, and we just have to mark which ones will go public and which ones are more private, have private information or something like that, or databases that we don't want to disclose.
So this isn't just like some weird forum that some intern is copying stuff into.
No.
This is literally your work tracking stuff.
This is the work tracking stuff,
okay.
The bug database, the feature database, and all we do is attribute it to market and say these are ones going public, and then other stuff we keep private.
Because if you need an intern, I could fill that, but I guess not.
Easy.
They already have that going. Brent asks, will we get downloadable content, DLC? Would love this for my app.
Store guy, I'll give it to you.
I will take it. So, downloadable content, so we already have this feature in limited preview. This is essentially building on something which you're already familiar with, how to package your application and game as an Apex. And so downloadable content follows the similar pattern. And we are currently validating this feature with a limited set of game developers where they are using this. After they launch their base game, they want to continue the monetization cycle by distributing something like map packs. And so we are currently validating that end-to-end life cycle, making sure that we have the end-to-end acquisition flow smoothened out and also all the right analytics flowing into the system. And we are looking to release this feature to a wide set of developers, all of you, later this year.
Awesome. So I feel like we're leaving gaming out. I've heard about UWP games. Can you really make good AAA games using UWP?
No question. A lot of them are already shipped. I mean, if you look at Tomb Raider on PC, for example, that's UWP game. There's a whole list of them. Forza Horizon 3, another example of UWP game on PC that's absolutely fantastic game.
So is this like a down-to-the-metal C++, DirectX, full AAA game?
I would treat it a little differently. On PC, it is more of a... there's an abstraction layer with the DirectX, so it's not technically to the metal, but DirectX provides a lot of the kind of to the metal like optimizations.
I remember trying to use DirectX one time, and I don't know what happened. I'll tell you that I was there for a while, and things happened. It was scary. From Pete.
You should try Pix for Windows.
I know. That looks really cool. There were some other things I saw at the last GDC that you could see, like the Pix pixels that were being layered on, you could actually see which call rendered each pixel.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's some tremendous things that are going on there. And so maybe one day I'll get into game development if I can figure it out. Pete asks, what's the difference between the headsets and the HoloLens?
So I'll take that one. The mixed reality headsets, in many cases they're occluded. So that means there's an opaque screen so you can't see beyond. And the HoloLens has a transparent view. It also has more sensors. So the reality of what they can project is the same, but they have little differences in the resolution they can show, whether you can see through it or whether it's opaque and occluded. And then there's the sensors, because there's a huge number of extra sensors for the price. You get all the spatial mapping, high resolution, depth sensors that are all on the HoloLens. And some of them will have that and some will not.
So is that like the difference between AR and VR and what's the other one, MR?
MR.
So we call it mixed reality because when you're building an application, you really want to design it to handle both.
I see.
And then that's sort of why we use the word mixed reality, versus VR, which might be opaque, and AR, which may not be opaque. Mixed reality is we truly want to mix those two worlds, and you want to design an application to kind of exist and work in both.
So because we have this focus on this mixed reality, traditionally when I'm writing applications for these different kinds of things, I have to write a different one for each thing. Is that the case with Windows 10?
No, actually, that's what Amy was able to show, is we actually took something built for the HoloLens, but it could have been built from scratch. And there's a few things you do differently. Resolution differences, font differences, and handling the fact of when you're included versus not included. You may do more, too. You may use more spatial mapping when it's transparent to get the world and the environment in there. And when you're literally in a fully occluded mixed reality headset, you may not do some of that. Instead, you may provide the floor because the user needs to see the floor.
Sure.
So a couple little differences, but it really is pretty minor. Really the only one that gives it all.
Or you could mess with people and not put a floor, right? I don't know if they'd buy your app, though. From Al, UWP XAML in desktop apps, will it ever happen? Or DirectX interop and so on?
So it's something we're looking at. You can sort of do it today. So it's not that you can't actually do that. Inside of a Centennial application, you can actually draw universal XAML. Challenge is it's not very easy to stitch it together. It's not as easy to get some of the code to work. There's some threading model changes. We're looking at it very heavily and trying to figure out how to make that more seamless and more optimized. But yes, it's something we're looking at making easier to do.
So is the mixed reality, coming back to that, something that can happen with games as well? Is it just
Absolutely.
A gaming thing? Is it just an application thing? Tell me about what's your vision for this.
I think it's a great new kind of green space as far as features go. So I think it, everything from education to kind of pure AAA gaming, I think it applies kind of across the entire broad spectrum.
And Windows 10 can handle, it's the UWP application that will work the same everywhere.
Absolutely.
Okay, awesome. So Dave asked, what is your favorite new feature that hasn't been talked about during this webcast? Oh, that's everyone's like,
So I can tell you some of the things I didn't get to that I wanted to do.
Oh, okay.
But they talked about later, so I'll talk about some of the things that I didn't talk about. So Project Rome was one of my favorite features because when I look at how we're going to move forward in the world, there's so many devices, I think on average like 8 in a family, you have 8 devices. The only way you're going to make sense of it is when we can build intelligence around your device graph. And one of the beautiful things about Project Rome is it actually knows your device graph and expose that to a developer so they can build experiences kind of leveraging the best of each of the devices around you. You can start from one end on the other. You can actually see what's happening on them all. And it includes things not even inside your Windows graph. So you can include your iOS, Android devices as well. So it's really your entire ecosystem of devices that belong connect to you. And I just think that's such a visionary way of looking at the way that things will work. There's new input types, new output types, and it's your device graph. That gives us kind of that technical backing to create those incredible new experiences.
I love the idea, but as a programmer, I'm trying to think, how does Windows enable that? Like, for example, I'm writing a UWP app, I'm doing some Excel, whatever, or maybe I'm doing some in some kind of UWP grid, and then I put on my mixed reality headset, and I want to see this grid exploded in 3D. Is that the kind of application you're talking about?
Yeah, actually, so the way it works is actually quite simple. A lot of developers begin to structure their applications around URLs or activation URLs that you can go and deep link into applications.
I see.
What we've done with Rome is give you two things. One is the ability to see your device graph and figure out which ones are close by, right, by using subnets and other different technology, try to figure out what's close by. And then you can say continue by giving a deep link to that app. So just like you would have launched an app on the current device, I can tell you to continue my app on the other device or start a different experience. So it's actually quite simple because it's the same URL-based launch deep link technology we've used on a single device, now working across any number of devices.
And that's amazing, because my background is data science. I can imagine a scenario where I'm looking at a flat table in a UWP app, and I hit a link to say, look at this in 3D, and then go and put the headset on and look around and actually explore sort of the data space.
Right.
That's pretty amazing. All right, so I'm asking too many questions. Ginny asks, are you considering SQL client support for UWP?
It's something that's on the list. I don't think we have a definitive answer for it yet, but it's something we've looked at.
And it'll show up on the backlog, apparently.
It'll be on the backlog, and we'll probably have some status on it.
Awesome. Al, is there any news on mods for UWP apps /games?
It's on the backlog is all I'd say at this point.
Okay, cool.
It's important. I mean, I'll say this. We know it's important. We want to do it in the right way. There are two different ways of looking at it. One is an understood structured mod where an application says, I have an extensibility point, and I want a mod that enables that. That's something we're very empathetic to. We're looking at how to go do that. We have some built-in extensive mechanisms. It's on the backlog. The ones where it actually modifies the binary that's running on the system, we tend to have a strong belief in binary integrity and knowing who published it and that it's not been altered.
Right.
Mainly protection against malware, because that's how those things do it. So we're resistant, I think, to that type of technology that mods the binaries.
Got it.
And probably not something we will enable in our store. At least right now, we have no plans to do that.
Okay. John asks, is game mode available to everyone or a restricted API XBL? I'm not familiar with XBL. Maybe you can talk about
Xbox
that.
Xbox Live is, I think, the acronym is what
we
they
use
mean.
Too many acronyms, yes. Guys.
Game mode is absolutely available to everyone running on Windows 10. So whether you're a Win32 game or a UWP-based game, a user can easily enable game mode.
Fantastic. All right, from Pete, what about JavaScript UWP apps? Are they still a thing?
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't talk about it as much here. I've talked about it almost every other presentation, which is we have a thing called hosted web applications. You very easily take a website and then basically just wrap it up in a UWP. You can just go and submit your URL. It's very easy. You can then say which WinRT APIs, projected APIs from UWP that we want to go call, and you get access to all of those. So it's very easy to reuse your web technology and web assets to build a fully functional, highly capable application that's more than just what a website can do. You can pretty much use anything on the platform.
So effectively, if you have a really powerful sort of SPA-like application, you can take that and then add into the hooks for whatever Win10 APIs there are.
Yeah, you get access to all of them.
Fantastic. Like, you know. That's awesome. All right, next one. Offering owners of my other app deals for a new app game is great, but what about cross upgrades from competing products?
So I will take that. We do offer capabilities to developers to run their own campaigns. So they can run their own campaign on any social network and target to a particular kind of demographic. So as far as store offering the capability of a developer targeting a deal to a user who is using a competing product, I think there are certain privacy and other regulation issues which we need to iron out the kinks. And so this is something which we are looking into. So that is all I have to say at this point of time.
Awesome. Awesome. I know we made a video also about sort of ads that you can have. You can have the way the ad system works in the store is pretty interesting because you can get ads from everyone. You can be in a specific group, or you can just do your own stuff as well. Can you mention that a little bit?
So we allow developers to run campaigns. So there are two kinds of campaigns you can run. One is outside of the ecosystem where you can run your campaign on Twitter or Facebook. Then there is also a campaign which you can run by just saying that please help me find users for this application, and we will run those ads on other popular applications. So that is one way of getting new users. The other is a change which we are making is surfacing these ads on other Microsoft properties like MSN.com or Skype.com or Outlook.com. So these are also all conversion funnels which lead back to your application.
Fantastic. All right, from Betterview Software, having trouble finding Desktop Converter in the Visual Studio Extension Store, has it been renamed?
Well, it's called the Desktop App Converter. And I know you can get it from the Windows Store, and I'm not sure why the Visual Studio Store, but you can get it from the...
It's just in the store.
It's just in the Windows Store, so you just go to the Windows Store.
Yeah, so they're saying there's a packaging project, and they're saying you can get it in the Windows Store. Yeah, definitely go and download that. And why don't you talk about the desktop? Is that the one that converts it over to Centennial?
Yeah, so what happens is the way it works is you run the Desktop App Converter. It takes your installer as it is. It takes an MSI, runs
That's right.
records everything that it does, and then writes it out as an AppX. And then you can use that AppX to install your application.
And we talked about this before. It literally looks at what your installer does, and it almost like fake runs it, traps all the things that you can't do in a store app, and then it redirects them if it can, or it tells you you need to fix something.
Yep.
That's amazing. All right, from Corey, are there any plans to support printing without a prompt for universal Windows apps for such things as kiosks in the future?
That's a good feature request. I don't know what our plans are there, but
somebody's furiously with a pencil right now writing stuff down. This is pretty cool.
That's why we have a backlog.
All right, from Bill Walter, do you have to be in the Xbox Insider to target Xbox for an application? If so, how do you apply?
No, you don't. You don't even need to technically have an Xbox. I encourage you to have an Xbox and go to Universal Dev Center and convert that that retail kit to a dev kit so you can test on it. But essentially, you just need to write a UWP, go up to Dev Center, and you need to click the target Xbox checkbox, and that's all you need to do.
Awesome. From Bill Walter, do you have to... Oh, we already did that one. So here's my question then. We talked about Cortana Skills a little bit. Can you sort of tell us the vision? Because we saw a demo of Cortana Skills. It was really good, and it got us sort of a sense. Can you give us a sense for why someone would want to do a Cortana Skill and how it involves sort of the Windows 10 ecosystem of devices?
Well, I think the key is we all have different ways we interact at different times in our applications. Sometimes I want to use touch. Sometimes I want to use my mouse keyboard. As you showed, sometimes I want to use my dial. Sometimes I want to use my pen. I think speech is key for doing very certain operations that you just want, especially if your hands are full. I'm drawing and doing this, and I just want to ask Cortana to go do something, or I want to interact with my application and ask it to go do something. So I think the skill is a way of providing that interface through speech. You can do it through typing as well, but I think speech is kind of the primary one. It's just natural to say things because you can get the job done more efficiently. Now, you don't want to say everything, just like you don't want to use your keyboard for everything.
I see.
But just like in humans, I'm talking to you sometimes, other times we're looking at each other, other times we're doing different things. We want to combine all the different inputs and outputs to create natural user intent assumptions.
So are we looking for Windows 10 to sort of break free from the old style mouse and keyboard and we want to be able to interact anyway?
We already do. A Surface device is literally that. You Surface Studio, you can go on it and touch it. It's very, very much for a touch and a pen device, you feel like, when you have it loud. When it's up, you probably use your mouse and keyboard a bit more, but I always find myself typing and then touching, typing, touching, whatever's easiest. That's really the answer. I'll do whatever is most efficient for me to go do and whatever feels natural.
I love the way that sort of we're breaking free from the screen and we're letting people do things what's natural to them. How should developers think about sort of the design process as they're thinking about these new ways of interacting with a computer? What do you? And I want you, all of your perspectives, because I'm sure you all have thought about this. What do you think?
I think so. This is something where we are looking at it from store point of view on how to enable those kind of dynamics. Both from end users and developers' point of view. So I think that is some challenge which we are looking into.
Awesome. What do you think? I mean, gaming.
I loved Kevin's example because often when you're gaming, your hands are full. You've got to have a controller in your hand and you're busy. And, the canonical example I always use is when someone just kills me, when I'm in a raid or something like that, I want to say, Cortana, who just killed me? And I want to get the answer right away so I can kind of get back at them.
That's awesome. Mm. Or Cortana, can you win everybody for
No, that doesn't work.
No, not that skill?
Don't have that feature yet.
And the reality is you don't even want to look at anything.
Exactly.
Right? You're already looking at the game, you're intense, and then you can hear it, and you're just more efficient.
Yeah. Because
right? you're not, you know, it's just so much
right.
better.
So one more question, and then we're going to wrap up, because I want 2 to 3 minutes on what you think people should, what do you want people to know? And so let's start with the last question. Is Project Roam coming as Xamarin Forms plugin? Could you do some store monetization plugin, one that works on Android or iOS UWP?
So Project Roam is not attached to C# at all. So when you think about how we want to build our frameworks, there are times like with Xamarin where we're optimizing for C# developers where they're building the end-to-end application as a C# project. For Project Roam, the goal is really to attach to any existing application out there. It's just like hooking in anybody else's SDK. It hooks it in there and allows you to connect to your device graph. So you can call it from C# inside of a Xamarin application. But if you have an Objective app, an Objective-C app written on iOS, or if you have a Java app or a C++ application, or even a Windows Java, you can get access to it from whatever language is appropriate. So it's completely language neutral and just plugs in as an SDK into the devices.
That's awesome. So to finish up, someone's watching this and they're excited about the Creators Update, what we're telling them as developers, what would be your pitch to them to say, hey, you should really start looking at this if they haven't, and if they are, what words of encouragement do you have for them? We'll start with you and then over here.
I think I'll start with the addressable opportunity. So we have more than 400 million users on the entirety of Windows ecosystem and highly engaged audience on Xbox and Windows desktop. So I would encourage you guys to start developing applications and games which work across the entirety of the ecosystem.
First and foremost, I'm a gamer. So I would encourage all those closet wannabe game developers, I was one of them at one point in my life, to really look at UWP and Windows Creators Update and start creating those games that you can not only bring to the living room, but you can also bring to the desktop PC and laptop PCs.
Awesome.
So for me, I think it's two things. One, we really have the richest ecosystem of devices out there. At least I believe it's the richest ecosystem.
Yeah.
You know, we have all the things from a great broad desktop play, we have great at console and Xbox, we have leading edge VR, and that, you know, VR mixed reality technology with HoloLens. And we just now also have IoT. There's so many devices, and we play in that world. There's this great reach that you can hit not just, you know, one type of device, but you can hit the users wherever they are. And two, it's really about the creativity and being able to create new experiences that engage users in different ways. There's input's hot. There's new ways of using input, combining them together. I just think it's magic. When you as a developer get it magical, you will just get massive engagement from your user base, and they'll drop everybody else. I mean, that's what you want, right? You want everybody using your app.
I love the idea of breaking free of the screen, so to speak, with pen, with the dial, with the cool mouse, with AR, VR, MR, as you call it, mixed reality. This has been awesome. Thanks so much for